This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bill Rajo and Tom Jostin, senior fellows of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, remembering 2001, but here we are in 2021. And after the fall of Kabul, after the tragedy in Afghanistan became fog of war, fog of civil war, very difficult, we have a couple of details that need to be very carefully explicated, because this is important now for how the jihadists are reacting, the enemy gets a vote, and how the U.S. is acting. Bill, I start with you about the Panjshir Valley. When we last spoke several days past, Massoud, son of Massoud, and others, the executive vice president Saleh, were in the Panjshir Valley north of Kabul, and at that time we're saying they'd repelled an initial assault by the Taliban, including people speaking Urdu and Arabic and Farsi. What is the fate of Massoud and the National Resistance Front in Panjshir, to our knowledge now, given the fog of war?
Yeah, John, it seems pretty clear now that the resistance in the Panjshir Valley has collapsed. It appears the Taliban were able to breach the Panjshir. What I think happened here is the Taliban just massed their forces. The initial assault did fail. Then I saw what I saw was the Taliban calling in some of their heavy hitters from surrounding provinces and from further away. And they massed their forces, pushed through the defenses at the Panjshir. I'm told that the Panjshir resistance went low on ammo, and they were penetrated. The Taliban probably took thousands upon thousands of casualties here. And if there's any fighting, it's now scattered. The Panjshir resistance was very active on Twitter. They and their followers, and now all they're tweeting about is atrocities in Panjshir, the suppression of women's rights and things like that. If they were active in fighting, we'd be hearing about it. We'd be seeing it. It seems the Taliban have crushed the last line of resistance to their rule, and now all 34 provinces are under control. It's a stunning victory. We had said at the Long War Journal, the odds were very long from the beginning when we wrote our first article about the resistance on the 18th. And what the Taliban did here is they showed will. They had the will to take the casualties and finish their conquest of Afghanistan. This is something the U.S. wasn't willing to do. This is something that NATO wasn't willing to do, or the Afghan government was willing to do. The Taliban went for it all here in these last several months. It was the final act in a multi-year offensive to take Afghanistan.
Tom, I come to you because at Long War Journal, and you can see Bill's write-up of the Panjshir as Long War Journal, you have a write-up about the Taliban and a 9/11 video. And what do we learn from this video, Tom, about Taliban and especially about its linkage or non-linkage to Al-Qaeda?
Well, you know, John, one of the things about the Taliban is that to this day, they refuse to blame or place responsibility for the 9/11 attacks on Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. And this is part of their ongoing disinformation campaign. You know, you go back to 2001, the Taliban senior leadership, Mullah Omar, Jalaluddin Haqqani, and others were very clear that they weren't going to turn over bin Laden both before and after 9/11. Some of the spokesmen for the Taliban, they used this ploy where they said, well, if the U.S. will give us evidence, then maybe bin Laden could be tried here or elsewhere, and we could see, you know, where that leads. But that was not a serious offer to turn him over. Again, the senior leadership rejected any offers to turn him over. That was more of a ploy to say that they didn't have any evidence that bin Laden really did this. Well, 20 years later, you know, the Taliban is still saying that. And so they released a video just in recent weeks in which they were celebrating their victory over Afghanistan, and they blamed America for the 9/11 hijackings. And that's in that same video, they celebrated their own suicide squads. And there was a very ominous tone to the video in which Mullah Yaqub, who is the son of Mullah Omar and is now a top defense official within the new Taliban's Islamic Emirate, he threatened very openly. He said, look, the suicide squads played a key role in our victory here, and they're going to play a key role in defending the Islamic Emirate going forward, which is a very ominous thing to say, that these suicide squads that are being trained will continue to play a role for the Islamic Emirate going forward. It shows that suicide attackers, their so-called martyrs, weren't just part of the battlefield to win in Afghanistan, but they have intentions for them beyond. And so what's interesting about this video was played on Afghan national television after the Taliban took control of it. And the discord, John, between what Washington is saying about the Taliban, what U.S. military officials are saying about the Taliban, pretending the Taliban is our partner, pretending that we can work with them on counterterrorism against ISIS. And then they're broadcasting a triumphant video celebrating the 9/11 attacks, blaming America and glorifying their own suicide bombers. I think the dichotomy between those two things shows you is a great example of the failures of American leadership here and why America failed. America never really understood who they were even fighting in Afghanistan.
The cabinet, I understand, Tom, the cabinet now named by the Taliban include Haqqani and also several of the people who exchanged by the Obama administration for Bo Bergdahl. Let's start with Haqqani. What is the significance of his presence?
Well, you know, Sirajuddin Haqqani has been named the interior minister for the Taliban's new regime. And he's somebody that Bill and I have been tracking for a long time. We've been tracking him in the so-called Haqqani network. They're intertwined with al-Qaeda. In a lot of ways, it's very difficult to tell who's an Haqqani and who's an al-Qaeda because they really, to us, just look like the same thing. And there's evidence that the Haqqanis really are just part of al-Qaeda's web. In fact, a UN report that came out this year said that Sirajuddin Haqqani himself may be a member of the al-Qaeda wider al-Qaeda leadership, which is interesting. So regardless of that allegation by the UN that Sirajuddin Haqqani is part of the wider al-Qaeda leadership, Bill and I have amassed a dossier of evidence through the years showing that he's firmly in the al-Qaeda camp, and he really is an al-Qaeda man. That evidence comes from the files recovered in Osama bin Laden's Abbottabad compound, comes from statements and videos put out by the Haqqanis themselves, statements and videos put out by al-Qaeda, operational evidence, U.S. Terrorist designations issued by the Treasury Department, State Department. Really, there's just a wealth of evidence showing that the Haqqanis, who really hold these key hierarchical positions within the Taliban's new regime, are firmly in bed with al-Qaeda. And there's been no break in that alliance at all. And that's part of the reason why we say that this victory for the Taliban in Afghanistan is a victory for al-Qaeda.
And the three cabinet members who were exchanged for Bo Bergdahl, are their return, is there anything significant there other than ceremonially saluting them, I guess, profile? Yeah.
So now all five ex-Guantanamo detainees who were traded for Bo Bergdahl in 2014 by the Obama administration hold key positions in the new Taliban government. Four of them are within the senior hierarchy. One of them is Karula Kerkwa, who was an advisor to Mullah Omar and actually negotiated the deal between the Iranians and the Taliban to fight against the Americans in Afghanistan after the U.S.-led invasion. Another guy is Nurullah Noori, who was he's now the acting minister of borders and tribal affairs. He was a governor in the Taliban's old regime. He's suspected of committing war crimes and killing, massacring, hundreds, if not thousands of Shiites. Another guy, Abdul Haq Wasik, he's the acting director of intelligence. Again, these guys were all held at Guantanamo. It's interesting, he's returned to his own old role because he was a senior intelligence figure in the Taliban's old regime. And in that role, by the way, he coordinated and worked with al-Qaeda. This is according to all the evidence we have in the Taliban's old regime. And so that you can tell now that if he's coming back to that role in the intel world for the Taliban, that in fact you should suspect he's doing that still coordinating with al-Qaeda. Then Mohammed Fazl, he's the deputy defense minister. He was a leading figure. He had about 3,000 men under his command prior to 9/11 in the fight against the Northern Alliance. He was a deputy defense minister in the old Taliban regime. He, too, is suspected of committing war crimes against Shiites and others in pre-9/11 Afghanistan. And he, too, by the way, was placed in he is known to have worked with al-Qaeda. In fact, remember, John, on September 9th, 2001, right before the 9/11 hijackings, al-Qaeda killed Ahmad Shah Massoud, the key leader of the Northern Alliance. Well, right after that happens, this guy Fazl coordinates with al-Qaeda to launch the offensive against the Northern Alliance to try and knock them out of the game and knock them out of the fight so the Taliban could take over. So this is how closely he's worked with al-Qaeda. And then the fifth guy who's traded for Bo Bergdahl is Mohammed Nabi Omari. He's now the governor of the Khost province, which is a big deal. He was involved in insurgency efforts there alongside al-Qaeda for years. And Khost is a known stronghold for the Haqqanis. And this guy had a relationship with the senior al-Qaeda Haqqani members. So basically the five guys who were traded for Bo Bergdahl are all back in the game. They all have senior leadership positions. And this is part of the ongoing humiliation of America and the degradation of American power.
Bill, the Taliban has been keen for some time to deny any linkage with al-Qaeda. You noted, however, in the offensive against Panjshir, there were people speaking many languages, and the indication is that only is possible with al-Qaeda network. Is there any indication that Al-Qaeda is reawakening the training camps or that people are heading there because of Al-Qaeda recruiting? We have about a minute.
Yeah, we haven't seen any new indications, but we know that Al-Qaeda has operated training camps in Afghanistan in the past. We believe that one is still currently at least one currently operating in southern Helmand province. We knew one was operating in Kandahar before the U.S. raided it in 2015. There's camps reported in Kunar and Nuristan over the years, and there's no reason to believe that once U.S. forces left that they didn't restart. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't seen any specific evidence of this, but I have no doubt that Al-Qaeda is restarting or will be working to ramp up their camps, training individuals who are coming in, training individuals who are already there.
Bill Rajow and Tom Jossen, they are senior fellows for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. They keep the Long War Journal, a chronicle of the vast landscape of the Ummah and the jihadists, concentrating now on Afghanistan, the reawakening of the Taliban. Also, Generation Jihad is their podcast. I highly recommend. The past is prologue. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.